Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Thursday, March 28th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, Senate lawmakers considering an amendment to a House Medicaid bill and substitute it with their own language. Then the U.S. Supreme Court deliberating if the FDA adequately regulates a major abortion pill. Plus, a new facility in coastal Mississippi is the testing ground for aircrafts that can fly without landing for months. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. The Senate Medicaid Committee in Mississippi continues to disagree with the House chamber on how Medicaid benefits could be extended to cover the working poor. The committee is advancing a bill that changes 1725, the House bill, and it must be adopted by the Senate floor. In that bill, they take out the House's language and put in their own. House lawmakers passed that bill in February. It would request a federal waiver so people who earn up to 135% of the federal poverty level would qualify for Medicaid as long as they work a set number of hours. But if the feds were to deny that waiver, the bill has language for a more standard path towards expansion. The Senate disagrees, saying they don't want expansion without a work requirement. Senate Medicaid Committee Chair Republican Kevin Blackwell of South Haven says their plan would also have a lower ceiling for who qualifies. Speaking with reporters following a committee meeting, he says the Senate's plan would limit these new enrollees at earning up to 99% of the federal poverty level. It would hinge on approval of the 120 hours per month work requirement.
Well, it's a conservative version. So we changed, basically we've been working on our side. So we did a strike all, put our Senate version of the language in the bill. It's significantly different. We have a conservative plan over here. The House bill was basically straight up expansion.
So why go up to 120 hours per month? That's almost 30 hours a week on average.
For someone who's basically working full time, you got payroll stubs. There's plenty of ways to verify. And that's what we try to do is we try to find the different items that are very easily verifiable. Within the bill, we're tasking both the Department of Health and Medicaid to promote the program. And we'd actually like to see more people on the exchange. I found out later there's about 300,000 people on the exchange and about 140,000 to 150,000 between the 100 and 138 of the FPL.
I mean, does this bill help Mississippians or does it help the hospitals and the insurance providers?
Well, it's going to help Mississippians. It's also going to help the hospitals a little bit because now you got a group who otherwise does not have insurance is going to have insurance. By not taking the people off the exchange, the hospitals are going to do better because the exchange pays about 40 to 42% better than what Medicaid pays.
While both chambers have different ideas of what Medicaid changes should be, there is a growing appetite for expanding the program. Governor Tate Reeve says he would veto any expansion of Medicaid. Democratic Senator John Horn of Jackson is on the Senate Medicaid Committee, and he says he would prefer the House plan over the Senate plan, but he says the Senate proposal is still some progress.
Well, it's better than nothing. I'll say that much for it. I think we're making some progress in getting a Medicaid expansion approved in the state of Mississippi, but it's not the bill I would have liked. There are a few onerous parts of it. I think if we leave the bill the way the Senate version happens to be, I think it's ultimately going to be not approved in the long run by CMS and others. So I'm really disappointed. But again, we're making progress and it's better than nothing. We've heard numbers that are closer to 300,000 that are the working poor. And it was explained that some of those working poor are on the health care exchange. I would challenge some of those numbers. I think that there are a lot more poor people out there who are working, who are eligible, who should be eligible for an expanded Medicaid, and we're not seeing that right now. The Biden administration is caught between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, they can see the reddest state in the country pass a bill to expand Medicaid. And on the other hand, the work requirement is something that they've never approved in the past, and so they may, you know, wind up having a challenge there. But I think that, again, we're making progress. Mississippi has a bad habit of leaving federal money on the table when it comes to helping poor people. We have numerous examples of that. So this is nothing new, but I would have thought that our chamber would take a higher road than what we have. My understanding is that the bill was not going to come out if we didn't have a veto-proof vote. So the bill's come out of committee. I assume we have a veto-proof vote.
Many health care leaders across the state are calling for the legislature to take action on Medicaid expansion. While the primary benefits would be for the working poor, they say bridging the large gap in insurance coverage for folks can help numerous hospitals in financial crisis. Attending the meeting of the Senate Medicaid Committee is Kim Hoover. She's interim CEO for the Mississippi Hospital Association.
Obviously, we appreciate the effort of the Senate to do something. We want this legislation to move forward. We want it to move. And so right now we really just want something to go through. So hopefully this can get to conference and the two sides can talk about this. Right now, Medicaid is one of the better payers in the state. And so the exchange, there are some who have high deductibles on the exchange. And there are some who simply cannot meet those deductibles. And when those deductibles can't be met, it leaves hospitals obviously, that's write-off. They're not going to be able to pay that. And so they're left with bad debt.
The Senate's plan to strike all the language in the House's bill, HB 1725, must be approved by the full chamber. A vote could come today. Coming up, the U.S. Supreme Court is deliberating whether the FDA adequately regulates an abortion pill. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Want to keep up with MPB? Go to mpbonline.org, or you can find us on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at MPB Online.
We are filled with gratitude to the gracious people who stepped up to tell MPB they love the idea of having Think Radio in their lives. If you missed your opportunity to take part, just visit mpbonline.org. Again, thanks from all of us at MPB.
Classical, jazz, indie, blues, folk, bluegrass, whatever you call your music. Find it on MPB Music Radio on mpbonline.org or the MPB Public Media app or on an HD radio.
On Thursdays, MPB talks about the things you love. We love our cats and dogs. Get advice from Creature Comforts. We love our vehicles. Get answers on AutoCorrect. Southern Remedy Kids and Teens is all about our loved ones' health. Our experts answer listener questions on MPB local shows right here on MPB Think Radio.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. The Supreme Court justices are deliberating if the FDA was wrong in its approval of an abortion pill, which can be purchased across state lines. The drug mifepristone is not available to patients in Mississippi through local pharmacies or physicians because of the state's anti-abortion laws. But some say the drug can be accessed by talking with an out-of-state healthcare provider, either by visiting them in person or through a prohibited but still accessible telemedicine process. A coalition of physicians argue this violates the rights of states, and the FDA was wrong in approving the medication. The court's ruling won't be handed down until later this year. Terry Herring is president of Choose Life Mississippi. She tells our Kobe Vance these pills violate state statute and hopes the court rules against the FDA.
From a practical standpoint, we have to look at what this means for women who are choosing abortion. And I think it's a dangerous policy. I'm surprised by the FDA making this such a loose decision in regard to women's health. I mean, if we're going to just talk about women's health, there is not a good way to confirm that a woman is only 10 weeks pregnant without an ultrasound and a visit with a doctor. So I'm very concerned about women taking pills for an abortion without any type of in-person visit to a physician.
What do you think the FDA's regulations mean for Mississippi, a state that doesn't allow this medication within the state's walls, at least to be sold and distributed locally, whereas this regulation does give some avenues for people to get the medication from out of state shipped in through the mail?
The attorneys that I consulted regarding this have confirmed my thoughts, which are it is still illegal in Mississippi that induces an abortion. So anyone sending a drug to Mississippi, think pharmacy or medical provider, even if they've done telemedicine, it is still illegal in Mississippi to do so. So I would say that anyone who seeks to deliver these medications in the state of Mississippi would potentially be at risk for a lawsuit by the state of Mississippi, by the Attorney General, for illegally distributing abortion pills in Mississippi.
Some of the concerns that have been raised by people who do support abortions is that if the court rules against the FDA's regulations, this would disrupt abortions in states that have voted to keep abortions legal. Do you have any concerns about that, or what do you think that would mean for Mississippi, but then extending into other states if that medication as a whole is reduced in availability?
You know, again, going back to my recollection of lobbying the state legislature in regard to this type of law, there is no requirement to follow FDA protocols. When we were lobbying the Mississippi legislature, the protocol was a two-doctor visit. Our abortion clinic did not require to visit to receive a chemical abortion. So we were lobbying the legislature to require by state law that the abortion clinic follow FDA protocol. So there is no requirement to follow FDA protocol per se. Now, any doctor not following FDA protocol could be, I'm saying in other states, could be open to a potential malpractice lawsuits. That would be the extent of it. I think the key thing here is states still, post Roe, have a lot of strength and decision-making ability and actually have become the dictators of what abortion looks like from state to state. And this continually becomes the problem on the abortion issue, that the protocol for this abortion drug changes radically after the overturn of Roe to make it more readily accessible, but at what cost? We know the babies are being aborted, but what about the woman's health? Is this really what's best for a woman's health? And I would say if you're applying any common sense, you would say that you should not take a drug to abort a baby without confirming the gestational age with an ultrasound, which is readily available.
Regardless of how the court rules, it won't affect Mississippi laws because those are not necessarily at question here. This is simply looking at the FDA's regulations. How do you think Mississippi will have to deal with either enforcing the laws that are already on the books or adding new laws that would, I guess, address this issue specifically?
I think it would be very difficult to police this issue, as we've seen with drugs coming across Mexican border with fentanyl, et cetera, we could have illegal abortion drugs in Mississippi being shipped across state lines. But I think any credible provider would also have to count the cost, because Mississippi would have the right to sue for the state if those abortion pills are crossing state lines. So, you know, on the Mississippi side of having, I do not believe at this point that we need additional state laws in Mississippi to address this issue. I mean, as we await the court's decision, again, you know, we only have an idea of how they might rule, but I think the United States and each state have to look at the best ways to protect the women within the state, and every state has the same opportunity that Mississippi does to follow something outside the FDA protocol.
Terry Herring is president of Choose Life Mississippi. Coming up, a new facility in coastal Mississippi is the testing ground for aircrafts that can fly without landing for months. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
The on-air portion of the MPB Think Radio spring campaign is complete, and we are back to uninterrupted programs. We are filled with gratitude to those who took a stand for everything you hear on Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Hey, if you missed your opportunity to take part, just visit mpbonline.org. Again, thanks from all of us at MPB.
Hi, I'm Richard Gershon, the host of In Legal Terms and a professor at the University of Mississippi School of Law. If you miss a live In Legal Terms episode, find our podcast, inlegalterms.mpbonline.org.
Thanks. If you took the opportunity to support MPB during our spring drive time fundraiser, if you missed your chance, please take a few minutes right now to vote for in-depth news and information by making a contribution at mpbonline.org. Thank you for your support.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. At the Stennis Space Center in Hancock County, a new hangar will be home to the testing facility for an airplane that can fly unmanned for months at a time. The Sky Dweller aircraft has a wingspan nearly the size of a football field, but still weighs less than a pickup truck. Solar panels are built into the wings of the plane that allow it to sustain flight using solar energy on a scale that's never been seen before. Robert Miller is CEO of Sky Dweller Aero, a company based in Oklahoma, and they opened the testing facility this week at Stennis. He tells our Kobe Vance this aircraft could be the middle ground needed, where communication towers on the ground and satellites aren't effective solutions.
I'm going to serve several different market verticals. The first one is government surveillance and security. So we're currently working with the U.S. Navy and U.S. Southern Command to help them police and catch nefarious activity in the Caribbean. So you're talking about border security, drug smuggling, human trafficking, things like that. The second market vertical is, which will follow the government surveillance and security, would be telecommunication, non-terrestrial communications, and that is basically being a cell phone tower in the sky.
So what's been the mission that y'all are seeking to reach, and how has things been going so far?
We're making great progress here in Mississippi. We've started flight testing here. We have some big announcements coming in the next couple of weeks. I think we're making very good progress. One of the reasons we chose to be here in Mississippi is the ability to fly out of the Stennis International Airport. We can get out over the Gulf of Mexico and doing a lot of flight testing there in an uncrewed, unmanned system.
So what else went into y'all's decision to be able to choose this airport in the Stennis area, and how do you think it's going to be able to benefit y'all for your long-term goals?
Well, we chose Mississippi for a number of reasons. One, the facilities here at Stennis are very good, and we were working with the state of Mississippi to improve the facilities here so that we can have a long-term home. Right now, we have a temporary hangar here in Stennis, and we're hopeful that in the long term we get a permanent hangar here that we can lease. Also, the leadership here, both at the local, state, and federal level here in Mississippi, has really been outstanding in their support of SkyDweller locating its flight operations, aircraft modification, and potentially long-term U.S. final assembly here in Stennis. We think that what we're going to be able to do here is do long-term operations in support of U.S. border security, U.S. Southern Command, and even U.S. AFRICOM here potentially out of Stennis.
What are the benefits of having an aircraft that can stay in the air for months at a time?
There's a number of benefits, especially when you think about the distances involved in the Pacific. So this is one of the reasons why the U.S. Navy is so interested in us. Think about being able to fly from the west coast of the United States all the way to the South China Sea, support U.S. Navy needs for maritime domain awareness in the Western Pacific from the west coast of the United States. There's nothing in the world that can do that right now except for this particular technology. Also, another use case would be supporting our operations elsewhere in the world. For instance, in Niger, where we have some, we have a large base in Agadez. Niger just had a coup. There's some question about our ability to operate long term out of Agadez, which would be providing surveillance in the Sahel and tri-border region, where there's a lot of issues with organizations like Boko Haram, which we want to hopefully rein in and possibly eliminate in the long run.
You spoke about your verticals earlier, but I wanted to go back to it real quick. You know, what do you see as the practical applications of this long term?
I think there's a great need to address what I would call the usage gap. So if you look about the people in the world that aren't digitally connected, there's actually 4 billion of those people who aren't digitally connected. And what I mean by that is, there's, of that 4 billion, only 600 million have no coverage. The other 3.4 billion have 2G coverage. Let's take the case of Kenya. In a demographic of, say, 100 to 200 people per square kilometer, up to a little over 1,000, there are 16 million people in that demographic. Of the 16 million, 13 million only have a 2G connectivity. So we could come in and supply those 2G people with 4G a very significant amount of the time at a very, very competitive rate. And, you know, you look plus or minus 25 degrees latitude around the world, there's lots of opportunity in that band to address that 3.4 billion people who aren't digitally connected. And that's also where the number of people per cell phone tower, number of users per cell phone tower is 5 to 10 times what it is in the U.S. So they're not going to be able to build enough cell phone towers in the future. And the bandwidth from space is just not going to be there. There's, you know, we're 65 times closer than the satellites, and so you're just never going to be able to get the same throughput. It's a megabits per square kilometer density problem.
Robert Miller is CEO of SkyDweller Aero. They're based in Oklahoma, and they are opening a new testing facility here in Mississippi. Thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, thank you.
This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.